morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, the 8th of September, and our market a little bit floppy today. Nothing to worry about. Down 18 points. We were down 54 at one point. A surprisingly poor performance from BHP and Rio, which pretty much unchanged on the back of an iron ore price bounce. The iron ore price up 4.83% overnight on the back of some strong Chinese export numbers. They look strong, but still iron ore exports are down year on year, which reflects this Chinese pressure on steel production. All short-term stuff, but enough to stop the rot in resources for a day at least. Fortescue Metals up 2 cents today. Went ex-dividend on Monday. The gold price took a nasty turn for the worse overnight, down $35. Most of the gold stocks down 4% or more. Northern Star 4.5%, Evolution Mining 4%, St. Barbara Mines 6.7%. NASDAQ was up, despite the Dow Jones being down 270 points overnight. Apple hit a record high. They've announced on September the 15th a launch event. The expectation is that they are going to launch a bunch of iPhones. You'd better go and tell your nuff children to go and queue up now. Bitcoin fell 17%. Not really a Bitcoin thing. It's more a bit of a cock-up as El Salvador, in a inverted commas, bold experiment, has tried to adopt it as legal tender, and it all went wrong. Angry citizens couldn't register on websites, some websites weren't offering Bitcoin, blah blah blah. Coin down 17%. The charts in the strategy piece today, after that big tumble it had from over $60,000 down to $30,000 in July this year, it has since bounced to $50,000. So traders delight. Don't try and tell me it's an investment. I think anything at all that gets described as an investment should come with some sort of volatility override, which says too volatile can't be considered an investment. And that certainly would be true for Bitcoin. Anyway, price down overnight to 46,800. Doesn't look like a material drop on the chart. Some concerns about the MU variant, have I pronounced that right? The COVID MU variant. Apparently it's rampant in the US. 99% of COVID cases are still Delta. And the World Health Organization has a list of variants of concern and variants of interest. The MU variant is on the variants of interest rather than concern list at the moment. Anyway, 167 cases in Los Angeles. The variant has greater transmissibility than Delta. It's in 42 countries. Fauci says it's not an immediate threat. Anyway, we'll keep an eye on that. A bunch of US brokers or investment banks or strategists have been downgrading GDP forecasts. Goldman Sachs did it overnight. Morgan Stanley also lowered their third quarter GDP numbers, as did Wells Fargo. On the diary, we got the FOMC meeting on 15th, 16th of September. Jerome Powell was terribly dovish at the Jackson Hole speech, which suggests that they are going to delay tapering. Morgan Stanley suggests that the weak jobs numbers last week, which also allow the Fed to delay tapering, were a temporary dip and it will recover in the fourth quarter. Morgan Stanley saying tapering in December is more likely than November. ECB meeting this Thursday, quite a few ex-dividends around. BHP put an announcement out today. I think every company should do this. Put an announcement out saying it has contributed $34.1 billion in total to the Australian economy in 2021. It'll be interesting to see who are givers and who are takers on the corporate scene. I'm thinking of putting a Marcus Today contribution to the Australian economy graphic out. Might keep the tax office off me when they see how much we're contributing. I reckon I contribute more than Apple and Google and Facebook. Anyway, good news this morning is Macquarie is up first thing. They've got an investor presentation out, and whilst they give some guidance about the first half of 2022 likely to be slightly down on the first half of 2021, which is typically conservative, the good bit is this line: favorable market conditions are contributing to a stronger first half commodities and global markets results. So the share price today, the feature of the day, up 5.5%, record highs. Very happy with that. Our funds are hugely overweight. it has been a remarkably poor performer during the pandemic recovery. In fact, it was underperforming at times in the pandemic recovery, underperforming the ASX 200. There's a chart in the strategy piece today. But it is making up for it now, which, considering the US investment banks have done fabulously with all this money printing and with strong equity markets, Macquarie does perhaps deserve a little bit of catch up. I've put a few tables in the strategy piece today showing you the chart, PEs, and the stock box today. The PE at the moment, the 10-year average is 14.5 times. It's currently on 20 times, but it's already down from 25 times. But if you take it a year or two out, it's down to 17, 18 times. Yield of 3.6% at the moment. We'll see what the research says tomorrow, but all the brokers embarrassing themselves at the moment, Citigroup in particular, have a sell recommendation and a $140 target price. It's currently $180. Right, let's get away from the routine stuff. I have got an article in the strategy piece today called Are You One of the Golden Generation? Now, this is an update of an article I wrote a while ago, and as I've updated it, I've realized I have been 39 years in the stock market. Joined the stock market in London in 1982. And here I am, still working hard, which is an embarrassingly long time, because as Emma keeps reminding me, if I was any good at this, she would have been in the Bahamas years ago, being waited on by a couple of nannies and a well-cut pool boy. But she's not, we're not, and of course many millions of us aren't. Or are we? And this is where the golden generation comes in. Some people are the lucky generation. And amazingly, most of them, which is considering most of our demographic is over 60, most of you don't even know it. And I've put a chart in the strategy piece today, which is a very interesting chart. I can't get data on the All Ordinaries back before about 1960. The All Ordinaries Index only started in 1980. So they've had to recreate it back to 1960 or so, but it doesn't go back to 1920. But the S&P 500 on my Reuters screen here does go back to 1928. So if you look at the 46 years from 1928 to 1974, what do you think the stock market did? Well, I can tell you. The S&P 500 over those 46 years from 1928 to 1974 went up 2.80% compound for 46 years. 2.80%. Now, I couldn't get the chart, but I can tell you inflation over that period used to be very volatile, and googling around, the average inflation rate over that period is thought to be around 4%, with the stock market going up 2.8%. Truth of the matter was, the real return, which is the return minus inflation, the real return from the S&P 500 or the equity market for almost 50 years prior to 1974 was negative. And this is why books like The Intelligent Investor became popular. Because in order to make money out of the stock market in the early days, or in that 50 years prior to 1974, you had to pick stocks. You had to be a stock picker. And The Intelligent Investor was a book which told you how to pick stocks. It was not about the market. There weren't great big fund managers that were cashing in on the undercurrent of profitability of the stock market. There was no profitability. There was no underlying tide that any nuff-nuff could dive into and make money out of. Participation alone was not enough. So you had to pick stocks, and that's why The Intelligent Investor and Benjamin Graham became so famous, because they came up with the solution of how to pick stocks. So that was the 50 years or 46 years to 1974. After 1974, the stock market started accelerating upwards. And have a look at the chart. For the next 46 years, which is conveniently from 1974 to now, for the next 46 years, the S&P 500 went up 9.46% per annum. 9.46% per annum. Add in a yield of what, 2% on the US market? And you get to sort of 11.5%. Now, I do have the numbers for the All Ordinaries since 1974, if you back calculate it from 1980. The compound return from the All Ordinaries Index since 1974 is 8.09%. So it's gone up 38 times in 46 years. 8.09%, the eighth wonder of the world compounding. Now, if you add dividends into our market of maybe 4%, then clearly you're getting to sort of 12% or so. A 12% return for the next 46 years. So prior to 1974, the stock market was a dud. Post-1974, it has been an absolute gravy train, and the property market with it. So what happened in 1974? I can tell you what happened in 1974. My dad bought a house in Henley-on-Thames, and he paid £35,000 for it. A year later, someone walked up the road, and Dad was always gardening, leant over the fence and said to him that they would buy it off him for £45,000. So he'd made £10,000 in a year on a house in Henley-on-Thames. And he couldn't believe it. In those days, people didn't buy houses to make money. Houses didn't go up in price. This was also the first house Dad had bought since he came out of the RAF. So he'd never experienced owning a house. So he thought his ship had come in, and he went inside and he spoke to Mum, and they just couldn't get their heads around the idea that someone was prepared to pay more for a house that they'd bought only a year ago, and when they bought it, it was new, and they couldn't understand why someone would pay more for a house that was now second hand, so it only just been built. A second-hand house, they're prepared to pay more. So they thought he was a crook, and of course they turned him down. And thank goodness for that. They sold it for five times that much a decade or so later. But what had happened was that the debt boom had happened. People call it the credit boom. It's really the debt boom. It happened in the 70s and in the 80s. It caught up with me in the 80s. I was in stockbroking. And I was renting a house in Brixton. I was driving a Mark III Cortina, which had been owned by at least 10 people prior to me. It had a gear stick that came off, which was actually a really good, seeing as I was in Brixton, was a really good anti-theft device. Any burglar that got in, I used to leave the doors open, any burglar that got in couldn't drive it away because it didn't have a gear stick. I put it in the boot. But in the 80s in broking, the debt boom caught up with me, or the credit availability boom. These were international. I was working for UBS. So these international banks were suddenly finding an access to money supply that none of us had seen before. It took international banks to do it. And they offered me a lease car, and I went from a Mark III Cortina to a fabulous Ford XR3i, black one with fog lights and pinstripes. So they offered me a lease car, and they offered me three times my salary and a zero deposit mortgage facility. And I went from living in Brixton to living in a flat which I owned, well, the bank owned, UBS owned, in Putney. And suddenly, there I was in the rat race. Debt up to my eyeballs, living off borrowed money. But of course, it didn't matter because the house price kept going up. The stock market was going nuts, and I was on a stockbroker's 1980s salary. It was good, no regrets. Anyone who didn't join in got left behind. And of course, this has continued until the present day. Helped, of course, by interest rates going to next to nothing. Our appetite for debt and our lack of concern about debt, the cost of debt, let alone paying debt back. Can you believe that? That would be just silly. But we are still rolling in this pool of internationally supplied cheap money, and on the back of that, asset prices are still going up. So net result, if you were born before 1954, which meant you were 20 in 1974, you can pretty much measure anyone's net worth starting at that date, depending on how much later you were born. So I was born in 1961, so I was 16 years too late. Not too late. I lost 16 years of appreciation. So I caught a lot of it, not all of it. Obviously, the GFC brought it all to an end briefly, but we've recovered from that, courtesy of our continued willingness and appetite for debt and borrowing, which has kept the housing market and equity markets going. But the end result is this. If you are sitting on a multi-million dollar house that you paid $80,000 for in Melbourne or Sydney or any other city, and you have got a multi-million dollar share portfolio that's been invested in the banks, for instance, in the 1990s, which completely perverted investor expectations. Australian investors think that share prices going up with a 7% yield is normal. It was a Australian bank sector aberration, which lasted a decade or two, so all good for that. But if you are now sitting on a multi-million dollar house you paid NAF all for, and a multi-million dollar portfolio that you achieved through doing dull, boring, diversified, predictable stock picking, then you can thank your lucky stars that you have lived when you lived. You are indeed blessed. You are the golden generation. And in that knowledge, I'm not sure our kids are going to enjoy the same experience or anything quite so easy. But your job now is to not sit there whinging about the pitiful return on term deposits. Your job is to appreciate how lucky, ballsy, or clever you were and focus on not losing it again. And there you go. You can read about all that and see the charts in the strategy piece. And by the way, on the subject of compound returns, just in case you think the stock market always goes up, you might have seen overnight the Japanese market hit a 30-year high. You should know, if you go and ask a Japanese retail investor whether they think the stock market goes up, always goes up as we assume it does, depending on when they were born, you will get some very different answers. So it's only people that have invested since about 2012 in the last decade in Japan who think the equity market is great. Everyone else thinks it's disastrous because from December 1990, the Japanese stock market fell 6.16% per annum compound for 22 years. Over 22 years, it dropped 76%. So we talk about the market always going up and compound returns of 9% over the long term being normal. But it's not. It can happen. It can go wrong. And in Japan, it certainly did for two decades. Although having said that, since 2012, it has returned a rather impressive 12.5% per annum compound over the last 9 years. But stock markets don't always go up is the point. Right, finally, on this day, the first episode of Star Trek was aired. It had two pilots, by the way, and in the first pilot called The Cage, it was rejected by the NBC for being too cerebral, too intellectual, too slow with not enough action. And on the back of that, Captain Christopher Pike, a bloke called Jeffrey Hunter, the actor, withdrew from the role of captain of the Starship Enterprise. Leonard Nimoy is the only actor that was in the original pilot who is still there. And by the time the first episode, which wasn't a pilot, went out, called The Man Trap, William Shatner had appeared and Scotty, Zulu, Uhura, if I pronounced that right, and Bones were all established in their roles in the first episode, stayed there ever after. Anyway, there you go, 1966. Lots of other things happened on this day. What I thought was interesting was the Duke of York, not to be confused with the grand old Duke of York, took the city of New Amsterdam in the Anglo-Dutch Wars and changed the name to New York. There you go. Did you know that? 1664. Anyway, that's about that. Our market has recovered from down 54 to down 14. Pretty good performance. All the banks are up a touch. Macquarie's up 5.7%. Gold stocks down. Tech stocks down. Lithium stocks dead in the water. Gambling stocks going up. It's not an investment, but I do think one day Crown is going to recover. As I leave you, the Dow futures up 36. Not giving us much, but not collapsing. It's all good. You have a fabulous day, and I will speak to you tomorrow.